1991 when I began as M. Burney, and I finished in 1995 when I was M. Barnes. So if the name's not familiar, hopefully that connects it up for you. And I'm now a lapsed academic, so I now work at Queen Mary in Services, and I've shared John's interest in bureaucracy and how to make universities work. I want to talk about, as many of us will, the supervisor as psychoanalyst. Being supervised by John was certainly a life-changing experience. To describe him in two words, I'd say he was polymorphously curious, perfectly capable of, and always prone to lighting upon passing reference or an odd word choice as the entryway into unexpected new topics for scrutiny. This shouldn't really have come as a surprise. I should have known what I was letting myself in for. Listening to his third year lectures on thinking in cases felt like playing hopscotch through an ever-expanding Rolodex of interests in an apparently random order. And one of our first conversations was why I kept leaving those lectures early, shaking my head at him. He raised the possibility of my doing a PhD with him because he found that behaviour curious. So our relationship was always as focused on why we each said and did what we did as it was on the content of his research or my own. And the supervision has definitely left me feeling as if I'd been on a couch that masqueraded as a hard-wooden chair. He definitely approved of my first choice of thesis subject, which was going to be the history of introspection and intuition, as you might expect. Of course not I did, but most of us have changed. He offered a three-step approach to my thesis in our first supervision. Step one, read Sentimental Education and Being in Nothingness. Step two, read everything on South Front and South Wing 5 and 6, if you will. Step three, write a book and come back. I was grateful for this confidence and trust, but having moved straight from part two to a PhD and never having written anything longer than a couple of thousand words, I did feel rather in need of intermediate goal structures. John was very curious about why I felt I needed this and set us the task of exploring the development of personal learning styles in general, and mine in particular, and of researching how what one reads and at what age shapes attitudes to knowledge, challenge, and authority. And at the time it felt like an enormous and time-expensive sidetrack, but of course it transpired that these details were vital to the eventual thesis, which is on the history of guides to self-presentation. When I found myself pregnant in the last year of my stipend, John swung too, and he offered to be the midwife of my thesis so I could focus on the pregnancy. Fetus and thesis raced one another to see which would be complete first, with John ensuring that drafts, even appallingly long and rambling early versions of chapters, were returned within a day or two with very constructive criticism to help me tighten the working quickly. Doubtless, his love of this notion of playing a midwife infected my dreams. 3 weeks before my due date, having just deposited the final version of the thesis at the print shop to have a number of hardbound copies made, I dreamt I'd taken my baby to the copy shop. I was going to have eight and had to give birth to a hardbound A4. Bravely ill, John reassured me that research would wait and I'd get back on the career ladder if I wanted to. It was safe to pour all my energies into my boy's care. At his inaugural lecture, 3 years later, after just a few minutes of conversation with me, he said, "It's time you're ready." And he helped me get back on the career ladder with the shortest reference I've ever seen. This ability to be simultaneously brilliant and highly alert to human emotions is a very rare gift.